Sri Milyani, Managing Director at the World Bank. We're here at the CAPE Conference 2012, Old Puzzles and New Pieces, looking at development cooperation in tomorrow's world. You've just given the keynote speech and you talked about the rising number of middle-income countries in the world, many of them graduating from low-income status. What does the increase in the number of middle-income countries mean for aid and development cooperation?
Well, definitely in terms of the demand for development aid or cooperation, middle-income country graduated from low-income country doesn't mean that they overcome the development challenge. Even in this case, the number of poor in many middle-income countries there. But they also have their own resource. They also build their own capacity to address their own domestic. So the engagement and interaction with many of development agencies is need to be changed based on the development, the level of development that they are having. Addressing issue which is more on a second generation of reform, that is institutional capacity, addressing the issue of inequality, using their own resources much efficient, and that's we responded with innovation, for example, like P4R, the program for result, institutional building capacity and knowledge exchange. I think that is the area in which the demand from middle-income countries is very important. Why it is important? Because I think if middle-income country able to address their own development challenge, that will collectively help the global development goals.
Okay, and you talked about this middle-income trap where countries are then unable to graduate to high-income status. Mm-hmm. How can aid and development cooperation play a role in helping middle-income countries to continue to grow?
Well, the trap usually characterized by the change of or fail to change of the at the institutional level, whether this is related to their, for example, public finance, for example, revenue or tax, creating both the capable or effective public institution is very important. It is beyond just adopting a good policy or macroeconomic policy, sound macroeconomic policy to have a fiscal sustainability, but they really need to have the institution that will serve the need of public. And that is very urgent, and that creates a trap when you have a higher income per capita, but then this income per capita is not really reflecting the quality of life or quality as well as inequality. And that is something which I think many middle-income countries struggle. That's why how the international community and development cooperation can help, usually in terms of technical assistance, knowledge, how they can adopt to build the right institution, for example, like strengthening the revenue collection, improving governance, capacity building, skill building, up to the level which is related to the decentralized, because many of the, especially big middle-income country, they are struggle with defining the right relationship between central or federal with the local government and making sure that they are able to deliver the public services for the people. So these are all things which is also important. Currently, if you talk about middle-income trap, also related to the climate change. I mean, because a lot of middle-income country, they move from low to become middle-income because they urbanize. And the design of the urbanization the process as well as the city is actually creating quite a lot of this carbon as well as the climate change implication. Even in this case, if you talk about the adaptation and mitigation. So there are a lot of what you call it a threat that they are going to stuck at the middle income. But there is a lot of opportunity and knowledge, experience that can actually serve many middle-income countries to avoid that trap through a good institutional building, learning to become more adept with the climate challenge, and nurturing the urbanization in a much more equal and sustainable way.
And the growing number of middle-income countries doesn't remove the fact that there are still a number of low-income countries which also need development cooperation, many of whom are fragile states. Mm-hmm. Do we need a different or distinct approach for fragile states in the way that we deliver aid and development cooperation there?
Yeah, I guess the fragile state is definitely need a different, both the engagement, the business model, as well as the commitment. Because, I mean, from the World Development Report that we the World Bank just issued last year, the issue maybe related to job is the same, but the way you create job in a fragile and insecure, you need to establish the security first. So there are many of the messages which is actually giving us the lesson how to engage with fragile state. Long-term commitment, because it is actually, when you talk about security problem and fragile or weaknesses in the institutional level, it will take time, even more than a decade, for this institution to be built, for security to be then stabilized. And then you can, at the same time, design the right policy in order to create job and economic activity that will provide more prosperity. I think hands-on, as well hands-on involvement or engagement, technical assistance, sometimes you really have to really deal in a very intensive way how to really substitute the institution which is not yet there, or even if they are there, they barely function. That is, I think, the message from the involvement with fragile and conflict state.
Okay, and no matter whether you live in a rich country, a middle-income country, or a poor country at the moment, inequality seems to be a hot topic.
Yes.
Many people here at the CAPE conference are already talking about inequality. You mentioned the banks focused on inequality. Mm-hmm. Is inequality as important as poverty reduction these days in development?
Well, it is important, as you mentioned. It can threaten the achievement on the poverty side, even when you allow this inequality that then create social and as well as political destabilization on a country. So addressing the issue of inequality is very, very important, because the sense that measuring progress only through the growth and income per capita is not really telling more or less accurately the welfare of the people across group or income level in this. And many, as the middle income country is definitely there, because they are currently being seen as a successful developing country. But it doesn't mean that they are not actually dealing with this issue of inequality. In fact, many of them is actually struggling. Latin America, in Brazil, Mexico, has been known that the inequality was pervasive like 2 decades ago. They are doing a lot of policy correction, including intervening at a very poor level, and that says improving their Gini coefficient and creating more equal. So shared prosperity and addressing the issue inequality has become the theme of the bank, because it is not substituting the poverty eradication, but it's really making sure that when you support or the country design their policy in order to eradicate poverty, they cannot easily then going back to the poor level, but at the same time, then it can sustain more the progress being made.
Okay, and finally, you touched in your speech on the demands the taxpayer in rich OECD countries is placing on agencies involved in development, and you talked also about the changing demands of aid recipient countries, middle-income countries. What do these changing demands mean for an organisation like the World Bank and its involvement in development cooperation?
Well, accountability and result is going to be like the theme. Because for the politician asking for the taxpayer money to be allocated for any development aids, for them it's not only justifying from the political side why we have to allocate resource for this kind of activities. It is, of course, the belief about the international public good, collective development goals that will require a cross-border or beyond one country's own welfare improvement. But I think for many of this demand for both the shareholder or from the donor as well as the recipient will pressure institutions like us to be able first to be transparent about how we manage our business, to be efficient, to be able to tell the result rather than just the process or input. And that is a challenge in terms of the way the bank reform ourselves this time. The focus, for example, of creating transparency, simplifying the business process, be more flexible, agile, but at the same time still holding the principle, which is good, collectively for the international community. I think that is the message. The result is definitely very important. We innovate on an instrument like, for example, program for result, which is actually we only pay when there is really an output or outcome achieved. But that's not only that, because beyond or below this kind of headline of result, there is really a message about capacity building, ownership, sustainability. It's there. So for us, message and the time is now to show to the international audience, whether you are on donor side, whether you are on recipient side, stakeholder wide, that we are an institution which is truly owned worldwide. We are governed and managed efficiently. We're focusing on results so the value for money can be justified politically.
Sri Mulyani, thank you very much.
Thank you.